Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 234 for February 8th, 2010. We are all Care Bears now. This Week in Tech is brought to you by the new Carbonite Pro. It's simple, secure, and affordable online backup for your small business. For a free trial and to learn more, visit CarbonitePro.com. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com/TWiT. And by GoToMeeting. Business travel can kill your company's profits, so do more, save more, and travel less with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/TWiT. This is TWiT, This Week in Technology, the show that covers the latest tech news in an iconoclastic, bizarre, and sometimes fragmented way, and mostly that's my fault, not the fault of the panelists. We've got a great panel today, even though it's Super Sunday. Joining us right now, from New York, Mr. Baratunde Thurston. Hey, Baratunde.
Brooklyn.
Oh, that's not Brooklyn. New York?
It's Brooklyn. It's part of New York, but it's Brooklyn. But I'm happy to be here. I'm not trying to waste a whole bunch of time.
From the borough of Brooklyn, ladies and gentlemen, Baratunde
planet,
Thurston.
Technically, but who's kidding? Planet of Brooklyn.
The planet, its own planet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad we got that straight, because I'd hate to have that get that wrong.
I'm here to educate.
Also here for the first time, we're really glad to have her, Kara Swisher.
Hi.
Of All Things Digital, allthingsd.com, Boomtown columnist, and one of the most astute observers of technology out there. So good to have you finally, Kara.
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry I haven't been on.
We've been trying and trying, but that's fine.
Well, you know, I've got dogs and children, so that's sort of my Sunday.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
In fact, you're probably grateful to get away from them.
Yeah, indeed, I'm thrilled to be here.
Also here, speaking of dogs and children, dogs and Englishmen, Will Harris. What is it they say?
It's mad dogs.
Mad dogs and
mad
Englishmen.
Dogs and Englishmen. Yeah.
Will Harris from Channel Flip.
I don't have dogs or children, thankfully.
This is a show we had to...
You can have one of mine.
How old are your kids, Kara?
4 and 7.
Oh,
and
they're
one
little.
Is actually here with, and 2 dogs, too. So, yes, they're little.
You know, we have teenagers now, and we avoided the dogs until we got the kids to stop peeing on the furniture. I figured
I cage trained my children. So.
Oh, very smart. Do you use a newspaper trick?
No, cage training works.
Just cage. Okay.
Baratunde is going to show up at your home.
Shaking his head.
In about 5 minutes.
So this,
if they were that good, that would be nice.
This panel is unique because we had to find a panel that cared not a whit about there's some big game going on, I don't know, in New Orleans. And it's in New Orleans, right? No, it's in Miami. It's with New Orleans.
No idea. Yeah. We have no idea.
It's the Baltimore Colts. No, wait a minute. The
Indianapolis.
People are
You're
going
such a geek, Leo. That's awesome.
People are going crazy
Baltimore
right now.
Baltimore Rabbits versus
it's Johnny Unitas and his Baltimore Colts against the New Orleans Saints. Who dat? Yeah. Who dat? That's all I know.
I was saying earlier there's a Kardashian involved. That's all I know.
There's a
I would actually love the Super Bowl if it were just all the football scenes from Friday Night Lights strung together.
Now that's good.
Victory for the Dillon Panthers. That'd be a great game to watch.
See, I think even you, Will, would appreciate American football if you lived in Texas and you saw Texas high school football.
Mm-hmm. I think so, probably. It has a very unique part in your culture, which nobody outside of America can quite appreciate.
Oh, come
apart
on.
From maybe Britain and cricket. Maybe it's kind of the same thing. Maybe in America cares about cricket, right?
Or soccer hooligans. Didn't Britain invent soccer hooliganism?
Well, that's getting a little bit derogatory now.
But they did perfect it, actually.
There you go. Perfected is
you
the
meant
word.
Hooligan in a good way.
In a good... What's wrong with that? Yeah. So Baratunde does have to go before the game begins.
Okay.
But for an odd reason.
I'll be live tweeting this cultural event. I like to take moments where everybody comes together and mess with them. So I don't know much about football. I picked Alabama in this bowl game because I just like the state of Alabama over Texas. It had nothing to do with the players or the stats.
Good.
So I'll be tweeting about the commercials and about very uninformed sports analysis coming from the top of my head. It'll be fun.
Actually, I think this was the idea of Luis Oliveira, who runs, who's my engineer for the radio show. He said, this is upside down TiVo day is what this is. This is the day you DVR the game so you can skip the programming and go right to the commercials.
It's true. They're good commercials. They're up on all the websites. They have them all up, all the commercials.
Do you remember?
Oh, I haven't looked at them yet. I was going to be a surprise.
Well, they're not up yet, are they?
Some of them are. I think they're previewing some of them on Yahoo. Yahoo usually has the best collection of them, like, typically. But they're all over the place.
So Yahoo does it. YouTube does it. Hulu does it, I know.
Yeah, they all do it.
It's funny. Don't you remember way back when that, in fact, this was well before YouTube. There was a site, and I can't remember the name of the site, that just was ads.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Ad Critic.
Ad Critic. Thank you. It's been driving me crazy all day. And then this is the funniest thing. This is what really dates it. The advertisers said you have to pull the ads down.
Yes.
you. What are you doing?
We don't want people to see the ads.
Those are our ads.
I think they were mocking them, though. More than anything.
They allowed, originally Ad Critic was for ad agencies and artistic directors to say what's wrong with this ad or so forth. But most of the time I went there, I just wanted to watch the ad. I wasn't reading the critique.
Right.
And how crazy is that for, you know, Budweiser to say, well, whatever you do, we have the copyright to the Bud ad. You may not air it in an unapproved forum.
Buy some Budweiser as a result.
That would be an accident.
You say it sounds crazy, Leo, but how many times do we see the exact same thing, or at least a very similar thing these days? Something that's designed to be out there and enjoyed by everybody, where someone pulls it down and says, are you not enjoying it in the exact way that I kind of meant you to enjoy it? So just ditch it.
Hulu, you know, NBC and Fox said, I mean, it's, but the reason I bring it up is because it just shows you that these, what is now, you know, in 10 years, in hindsight, 10 years later, obviously foolish, persists.
Well, they put them back. I think they want to they sometimes release them when they want to. And, you know, like the Susan Boyle stuff was interesting. It kept coming down and being pulled off and coming down. I don't think they have a lot of control over it, but they're certainly trying to control it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they want to. Like the Conan stuff has been interesting. There's all this debate over whether they own, whether they can put up these Conan things that were sort of insulting to NBC or not.
Is there a fair use argument that it's somehow editorial?
No, probably not. I mean, just tiny clips of it. People are putting up the whole 4 or 5 minute thing. So no, not 4 or 5 minutes. Probably one line would be all right, but not 4 or 5 minutes. That's kind of crossing the line.
And yet, I mean, let's face it, Saturday Night Live was dying on the vine until people started putting up
clips of it.
Clips on YouTube. Yeah. And of course, immediately NBC says, oh, you can't do that, but it's good for them.
Well, some of it is. I mean, I think all the media companies are probably going to try to pull back fair use now. It's debate going on between News Corp, which owns our site, actually. I don't agree with them on this. I think they're going to try to fight and restrict fair use even more in their fight with all the websites and everyone.
Murdoch wants to put, what's a paywall?
They want to do, that's fine. He can do whatever he wants and that, but to restrict fair use, that means going to Washington and paying for lobbyists. And Google will have their own group of lobbyists doing the same thing. And so that should be an interesting fight this year. What's going to happen to fair use and things like that.
The lobbyist off.
It is. It's the lawyer off.
Murdoch claims that Google is sucking the lifeblood out of journalism. You guys are free riding. Everybody always accuses Google of free riding.
Takes one to know one.
Well, I mean, I have to say, there's one of the mags that I read in the UK is a mag called Broadcast, which is for the kind of TV industry. If you go to Broadcast, any of the top stories, it's behind a paywall, which is, it's like a few hundred quid a year, I think. If you go to Google and you type the headline of the story that you want, you can just read it all on Google.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. This year is going to be the big year of content, sort of the idea of how much content is worth and what they can keep back and what's available and how that impacts them. I think there'll be more and more paywalls. They're going to try it, I mean, and then we'll see what happens.
Does the iPad change any of this?
Well, I think so.
For me, I think the sad thing, possibly, or, you know, at least the kind of insufferable thing, was that all these old media companies that have had their head in the sand have been going, oh, you know, the web is killing our business and we've got to find a way to make people pay for everything. And that actually, if all this kind of stuff about digital subscriptions and the Kindle and the iPad kind of takes effect, that actually they'll have just ridden out 10 years of pain to get to a point where they're just selling the same thing, which is 50p for a newspaper every day, except it's on your iPad rather than on paper.
But that's how
insufferable if they've actually been right the past decade.
That's how these companies want it, because that's been their business model from time immemorial,
sure.
Right?
Absolutely. Well, no, they'd like the internet to go away. I think that's really the first choice.
Okay.
They do. I remember the first decline, I think it's in the 2000 when they had the .com bomb. They all were like, oh, thank goodness carrot's over. I was like, get ready, my friend. I mean, it was really, that was this sort of attitude, like, phew, that we missed that one.
It was close.
Yeah, that was close. And I was like, get ready to really die now. But I think they would like it to go different, but they'd like to have some modicum of control over it, and they're not used to that in the way they've set up their businesses. And so what'll be interesting to see is what happens when they, with this iPad. I think Steve Jobs, who has sort of an enemy of the music industry in a lot of ways because of the pricing fights he's had with them, is now the savior of the print industry or the book industry or whatever, because, you know, Macmillan is, you know, pointing to the iPad for fighting Amazon and the $99.99 book price. So it should be, it's interesting. I mean, unfortunately for the media industry, none of these people are their friends. I mean, they either Amazon or iPad or Apple, because they're going to control these distribution devices.
But they do prefer the agency model that Apple uses, where they set the price, Apple takes 30% of whatever that price is, to Amazon's model, which basically says Amazon sets the price, tells you how much you're going to get, and take it or leave it.
Well, we call it for now. I mean, what if everyone's using an iPad? What could they do then? I mean, that's the thing, is they're just trading one potential problem for another. I mean, because if they look at what happened in the music industry has been fighting Apple to raise from 99 cents to $1.29. Now, they eventually did it, but there wasn't a lot of options in paid music.
They had to make a concession, which was removing DRM.
Right, exactly.
Huge concession.
You know, if this thing catches on, and we'll see if it does, or hopefully there'll be lots of these, which would be great. But if this thing catches on and they have, you know, most of the New York Times, for example, comes over, or the Wall Street Journal or whoever they're talking to comes over these things, they're in a deleveraged position, I would say.
So. I read a great great blog from Dave McClure, this week, on how the future of all these companies will be who can build the biggest, most ubiquitous micropayment system. That Apple is already a long way there with mm-hmm. its, you know, yes. sort of, what is it, 80 million people who have credit cards registered in iTunes. They can aggregate the purchase mm-hmm. together. They only charge you once every few days, so they pay less money. And that the big competitor to that won't be Amazon, in fact, but will actually probably be Facebook and Facebook's alleged micropayment platform.
Right. Well, they have a lot of alleged everything.
You can already buy, you know, fake flowers and gifts, you know, the Facebook gift economy and a lot of the
Well, you can already buy real stuff with Facebook
easy
credits,
to spend
right?
money, yeah.
Oh, man, I wish I were in the business of selling bits for real money. I mean, boy,
you
is
know, they
that
make a
business.
Lot of money. Don't laugh at that.
High margin. You don't have to make anything.
Those things are inane. You know? I mean, I got like a cupcake. I was like, screw that. I want a real cupcake. You know,
but I gave you a cupcake.
Whatever. They make a lot more money than you think at those.
Oh, of course they do. Well, you know who makes money is Mark Pincus of Zynga.
Yeah.
Makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year selling virtual, you know, farm implements.
Chips and whatever. He has a bunch of games, but yeah. I mean, I think he probably makes more money in the poker area. But yes, the farm, whatever the farm.
Hey, don't
we're gonna starve don't as a nation farm. Because of it.
Yeah.
People just know how to click their way to hunger.
We've had our Farmville moment on this show.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I gave
the funniest,
up.
The funniest Farmville thing is the Jason Calacanis fraud or whatever. I did an interview with Jason. Which
you didn't fall for that, right? You
no,
knew better.
No, I did not.
Of course
really?
Not.
Really? It would weigh 112 pounds yeah. and cost $4 million.
I was stunned that anybody fell for that, and I was surprised at how much opprobrium was heaped on Jason for doing it when it was obviously a joke. What was your opinion on that, Kara?
I did an interview with them, and I agree. I thought, you know, it was so obvious that it was a joke. And if you read them all together, I mean, it was ridiculous. He was putting solar panels on it. He was having
three cameras.
You know, and the farm animals, you could throw them from iPad to iPad.
Now, that's a feature I want, though.
I know, but really, like, oh, take my cow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Plus, it was Jason. Please, yeah. let's start with it was Jason.
And yet CNN and others ran it as if it were.
Yes, the Wall Street Journal did, too.
Did the Journal?
Indeed.
Oopsie.
Oops.
Oopsie. Oops.
Nice.
You know, it was, you know, what it just, they should have checked. They should have called. And in fact, none of them called him, which was amazing. Or Apple, I guess. They may have tried, but.
Well, you're not going to call Apple, but if you called Jason, the first thing he'd say.
Apple. I call Apple. They
who answers the phone at Apple? Someone who's like, I'm sorry, you used a Google phone to call me. We can't talk to you. Like that company is.
You may not say the word, the A word, or the G word, or the M word when you're speaking.
You can't even use the letter G in combination with the letter O if you're doing any business with Apple.
I do want to talk about this because there is a shooting war that has just erupted between Apple, Google, Adobe.
Another one.
This is nuclear annihilation here. We went to the nuclear option, and it's only going to get worse. I want to talk about that in a second. We've got three great panelists here on Super Bowl Sunday. We're going to move fast today because Baratunde's got to live tweet the bowl game. Baratunde Thurston, it's great to have you. Baratunde.com, Kara Schwisher from allthingsd.com, and, of course, from channelflip.com, my good buddy Will Harris. But today's show, and by the way, the smoking light is on. Smoke them if you got them. I have to tell the panelists that so they know they can light up. We actually had a guy, I won't name names, but a well-known industry maven who started rolling a joint during the commercial.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not 420 yet. So
What country was he in when he was doing
that? He was in he's in California, which is, in fact, the nation where marijuana is virtually legal.
Yeah.
I mean, only a matter of time. I suspect this November.
You know, we don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about? What?
When I was in China over the summer, and I asked our guide, tell me about drug use here. She said, what are you talking about? I said, we were walking by a head shop that had bongs. I'm not kidding. In the window. And I said, well, those are used to smoke marijuana. She said, I don't know what that is. I said, okay, fine.
You gotta love the Chinese.
Yeah. That's exactly how, that's what they do. When say internet censorship, says, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Someone I know was at a meeting at one of the big search companies with the Chinese officials, and they said, you know, when you call up Tiananmen Square or Tibet, no pictures came up, and the guests, the official there was like, oh, that's the choice of the search companies. They want to do that, and they were like, what?
They feel it best not to offend our cultural sensibilities.
Yeah, they have like something called three T's and an F. It's Tibet, Taiwan, Tiananmen, and Falun Gong.
Yep.
Yeah. And so
don't talk about that. In fact, this show just got banned in China. Thank you very much.
No problem.
That's okay, because they're not interested in Carbonite Pro, our sponsor of the hour. Carbonite Pro, brand new, by the way, from the folks at Carbonite. You've heard me talk for years about Carbonite Online Backup, a great system for backing up your data on your computer. But many people have asked me, well, what do I do in a business? I have multiple computers. In fact, I know people who have individual Carbonite accounts for each computer. There's a better way now. CarbonitePro.com, the same great Carbonite online backup for PC or Mac. The service developed to back up your stuff automatically to the internet. More than 100,000 people use it to back up computers in their offices already. And we thought maybe we should tell you about the pro version. Just came out. CarbonitePro.com. You could try it free for 30 days. And by the way, we always do this with our sponsors. We really want them to give you the free trial to make sure this is right for you. And I think anybody who's got a product that they're willing to stand behind is going to do that. And that's what's great about it. You can try it. You can see if it works for you. I can tell you, you're going to love it. AES 256-bit encryption before the file even leaves your computer. You choose the key, so only you can unlock it. 128-bit SSL while it's being transmitted. It's kind of the belt and suspenders technology there. And prices for businesses with many computers as low as $10 a month. In fact, it will cost you less for those of you, those 100,000 of you using Carbonite in the office now to back up individual computers. You'll save a lot of money by going the Carbonite Pro method. And a unified dashboard for all your systems so you can see what's going on. You can make sure it's happening. And if there's ever a data loss program, and I like this, each employee can access their own backup files. You'll be notified, of course, as the administrator, but individual employees can, you know, let's face it, people throw stuff away by accident. They don't have to be embarrassed and go to you and say, you know that report, my TPS report, I threw that out. They can just get it back. CarbonitePro.com. Try it free for 30 days. It is awesome. Kara Swisher, Will Harris, Baratunde Thurston. We're talking about the latest tech world stories. Google supposedly, we'll be watching tonight on the Super Bowl, has got a third quarter ad. Mm-hmm. Speaking of credulous journalists, John Battelle on his search blog posted a ad from YouTube, a Google ad that was, I mean, something that's never going to run in the Super Bowl. It was an ad for France, for one thing. Have you seen it?
Okay. You know, well, you know, they had a bunch of ads.
Well, that's the thing. These were ads they ran on Hulu like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, we put them up, I don't know, November? Or, you know, it wasn't a year ago. They did a bunch for Chrome and then a bunch for search. They had a whole bunch
of search ads, exactly.
Yeah, you know, you keep clicking and they tell a story of romance or whatever.
Yeah, they were romance, which, you know, is going to go over well with those beef eaters watch Super Bowl. Yeah.
The best one was the Tiger Woods one. And it shows kind of what Tiger should be searching. It shows the evolution of his downfall through search.
You're kidding.
It's like, how do you repair the grill on your SUV?
It's on, it's on the front page of Gawker. It's really funny.
Did The Onion do that?
No, The Onion did not do that.
It sounds like an Onion ad.
Yeah.
Well, in any event, you know, Engadget and a number of other blogs picked up John Battelle's post saying, oh, this will be the third quarter ad. Well, of course not. This is an old ad.
Yeah.
The best Google commercial you're never going to see. This is from Gawker.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Slate V. Oh, this is not an official one. It takes off on the ads that Google did run, the official ads that Google did run.
Yeah, it's like a great parody.
Yeah. Oh, we got to watch it. I'm sorry. I have to. This is from Slate. I'll have to talk you through it because it's all music. How to hide facial lacerations. Google search. Band-Aid. Escalade grill work. Oh, this is mean. Oh, this is so mean. How to get bloodstains out of clothing. Out of a green jacket. See, this is the style, though, of the ad. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Now he's searching for the girlfriend. Derek Jeter.
Oh,
painful. Derek Jeter. Oh, no. Okay, I'm stopping right there. This has gone too far.
The title of the video is called "Is Tiger Feeling Lucky Today?"
I'm feeling
later
lucky
in the week.
Oh my goodness!
Zales is where he's supposed to get his wife a diamond.
How much for a Zales diamond ring? How much for the entire Zales company?
Yeah,
he's getting Mark Sanford's apology. That's funny.
Yeah, it didn't work. Did you see her? She's all over the web and everywhere with her new book.
Oh, really? The tell-all?
Jenny, yeah.
Not the girlfriend?
Jenny from the block?
No, the wife.
Really?
Mrs. Stanford, yeah. She's quite a strong survivor.
Oh, Mrs. Sanford, not...
Mrs. Sanford, yeah.
Not Tiger's wife.
She's like back in Brazil or whatever.
Yeah. It's not This Week in Affairs, but sometimes we just get sucked into these things.
Anytime,
Although,
love to talk about
that. That would be a good show. Come
Well, invite me on, because I read everything.
you know all the dish? About.
You know, Walt Mossberg and I are huge celebrity gossip site fans. We're just crazy about them, I have to say. It's our share, one of our many things in common.
Now, I find that fascinating somehow.
Yeah. We like I'm Superficial. That's our favorite one.
But you got a great scoop. You got a great
Superficial is better than Perez, right?
I'm Superficial.
Oh, Perez is an idiot. Oh, please. Sorry, Perez, but you are. But Superficial, the guy who writes it, I'm trying to meet him. He's a hysterically funny writer. And he,
snarky
and
as it's, hell.
You know, he's hysterically funny, and there's bikini shots all day long. So pretty much all it takes for me. So
I like the title. I'm the Superficial because you're ugly. Is that it?
Yeah, exactly. It's really funny. Yeah. Oh, bikini shots.
Oh,
yeah.
Anne Hathaway funny, reveals
but,
all.
But I'm reading it for the text. Let me just tell you.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
Not the bikini
shots. No, of course.
It's the articles.
It's the articles.
Yeah, it really is.
That's why I'm looking forward to the Kindle version of Playboy magazine, because it just gets all that, you know.
Does anyone read Playboy?
Yeah, the black and white renditions will be spot on.
It's all those,
16 scales of gray.
It's even more artistic in black and white.
Yeah, why even put the pictures in?
And we've degenerated just because of May. Sorry, let's move on. Yeah.
No, I'm Kara. I'm going to thank you because
I can go way low. So.
If it weren't for you, I would never have found out about it. I'm Superficial.
Yeah.
Here's a segue from Playboy on Kindle back to Apple and Google's fight over this application store approval. So for those who don't know, there's a guy who has, I don't remember the name of his game.
It's an SAT. It's an SAT flashcard.
It's
a flashcard program. Yeah.
Help you prepare for studies. And it did really well in an Android developer challenge. So he wanted to list that in the meta information about the app as far as, you know, some marketing to say, hey, it did really well over here. So you should trust this app more than apps that didn't do really well over there.
May I do a dramatic reading?
Please, Apple kindly responded as follows.
I'd like to do a dramatic reading of the Apple response. During our review of your application, we found that your application contains inappropriate or irrelevant program information in the application description and or release notes section. While we hasten to say your application has not been... Actually, you know, I'm not reading it right. It should be more like...
Well, because you're reading like Masterpiece Theater.
While we would like to say that your application has not been rejected...
That's better.
It would be appropriate to remove the words finalist in Google's Android Developers Challenge from the application description. Please log into iTunes Connect to make appropriate changes to avoid an interruption in the availability of your game. That is like heavy-handed.
To be interrupted.
Yeah. We would hate for that.
So first of all, screw you, Apple, very loudly and with a hashtag.
Yeah.
Second of all, this capricious, like inconsistent process. It's so opaque. It doesn't scale, and ultimately, it hurts the world of ideas and it hurts innovation because your block is down to subjective things about fonts and specific words.
They've blocked applications for an ugly icon. Because the icon was ugly.
That's normal for Apple. I'm sorry. I mean, he's obsessed with fonts and look. I mean, unfortunately, it is his world, and you just live in it.
Come on. Now, I have to say,
you may not like it, but that's the way it is.
This one is not, because this one is clearly a response to Google, which responded to Apple. So I think this started 2 days after the iPad announcement, when Steve Jobs held an all-hands meeting and said, Google's slogan... "We're not evil" is bull.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't get... This is aggressive. He also said, by the way, Adobe's lazy and stupid.
This means war.
It's a declaration of war. So what does Google do? Google immediately, they were holding off on multi-touch in the Nexus One, pushes out an update within days to the Nexus One that puts multi-touch back into it, saying, okay, you know, we were going to be nice. We weren't going to challenge your patent. Go ahead, Apple, sue me. So I think that this Apple Android thing is completely a response back. We're in a shooting war, don't you think?
Go ahead.
So it's fun to watch. And I think what's interesting is, you know, Jonathan Zittrain wrote this great book, The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It, where he talked about the risk of tethered devices and even marketplaces that are tied to single companies that can influence the types of ideas and applications we have access to. It's a great read. I don't get any percentage for saying that. It's just a good, thoughtful book. I think what's interesting here is Apple has such control. They've been super successful. They're really pretty. And you know, we talked about this before. Oppression is often beautiful and very aesthetically pleasing, but it is a mild form of injustice and oppression. And what I'm hoping is more competition from Google is better for us, right? It's going to force Apple to do more. But even this whole concept of a gated community of apps that requires ultimately a person to sit behind a desk like an old school operator with cables to connect point A to point B is foolish. It's 2010. We're in the 21st century, for goodness sake. There are billions of web pages and billions of apps to follow. And that just it's not going to fly. So what it's forcing developers to do is to think about, you know, do I want to enter a business with such a high level of unpredictability where I have to create a whole app before I find out that they're going to say no? And it's pushing them to look at other alternatives. So,
that might be wishful thinking. I don't know if they are.
I'll give you an example. The Google Voice app is a mild example of this, because there is no Apple version because Apple said no.
Right.
But so they just made a web app for it.
Google. And
the web app is super functional. You don't need to go through an app store. You just point your browser and you use this crazy thing called the internet, which was designed to deliver, you know, goods and services and interactions.
It was a workaround to what Apple's doing. I mean, on one side, you could say, well, they do have the most successful smartphone device around. And it's been years before anyone's really competed with it. And even still, as nice as the new Google phone is, it's still not quite a competitor yet to the iPhone. Yet. That doesn't mean it's not going to
be. It's only sold 80,000, but I have to say, as far as I'm concerned, it's better than that. It's what I use now.
Well, everyone has a different opinion. I'm just saying it's not a killer. It's not an iPhone killer what people are looking
for.
Nothing
is
happened.
An iPhone killer.
And it's still, it's been years now where people haven't competed with this phone yet, and they should, and they certainly should. But I think the issue is, will Apple get into the same situation where it was in with the Microsoft, with Microsoft years ago, where Apple will be more of the precious smaller one versus the big wide mass market Microsoft within the computing space. The same thing happened before. They did a lot of gating. They did a lot of, we're only developing on our thing. You can't have more than this kind of computer. We're designing everything from soup to nuts. And the question is, will that matter, or will they respond? And and maybe avoid that to have it the second time because you got this massive lead right now.
They've struck this really good evil genius balance between open and closed, much more open than they were in the past, but closed enough to still play the a-hole card and invite screw you Apple hashtags to fly, which they are on Twitter.
Well, so everybody on some levels, this guy doesn't care. I mean, he's creating what he wants to create. And so, you know, they're massively profitable now and doing very well with a lot of their stuff. So, and their stock, of course, which can go up and down, of course. But they certainly are massively profitable with what they're doing.
Well, and that's why I think a lot of developers are still in the Apple Store. I mean, they just follow the
when
money.
When we made
right?
ours, it was no choice. We did the iPhone first because that's what everybody was using.
And that's the heartbreaking, what you just said is so heartbreaking.
Just well, my heart wasn't like broken. It's just human,
humans. You know, this guy, he had to pull the word Android out of his app's description.
Isn't that horrible?
He's the Apple gods. Yeah. Like, that's absurd.
Yeah.
You know, it's not right. And that's what just bothers me. I know it's not business-wise, he's probably doing great. But it's just a sad statement to the level of power Apple has and the flippant ways in which it abuses that power.
Well, this is not new. This is his entire history is what he's done. Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, him being sick probably and surviving it, it probably strengthened his, like, you know what, I'm going to do what I want. This is my vision.
It sure seems like that. I've never heard him so outspoken as at this all hands meeting.
Enough. He's like, I don't care. You know, I beat cat. I might beat liver cancer.
Right. So what can Eric Schmidt do to me?
Well,
I would love to see an all-out war between Apple and Google. Let's just bring it.
It is. You know, and by the way, throw Amazon into the mix because they're at war with Google right now. In fact, I thought it was a huge mistake. Jeff Bezos made a very rare tactical blunder when he yanked Macmillan's books because he was forced. Well, he was forced almost immediately to back down.
Yeah.
And that's the opening that Hachette and every other publisher, there's only five big publishers.
Yeah.
They're going, oh, this guy's powder's wet. Let's go. And so everybody's going to go to the iPad. Go ahead, Will. You haven't said anything in a while.
That
was Jeff Bezos' real kind of, staring down the barrel of the gun and blinking moment.
You could never see Jobs blinking,
could you?
No. Jobs will go down in flames before he'll blink.
Absolutely.
They'll be beautiful.
I want Google to do this. Like, Amazon basically retaliated against Macmillan by pulling not only all their ebooks, but all books for a time, right, from their entire online store.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I want Google to do the same to Apple. Like, you want to play this game, Apple? We will erase you from the internet. Like,
oh,
you're done.
Yeah.
Now, Kara, don't they have to worry about the Department of Justice or somebody kind of getting...
Apple?
Anybody. You can't start doing all of this stuff.
Well, no, Google probably is the one in the crosshairs of the Justice Department at this point.
Apple's not a monopoly, but yes, they are.
Yeah, but it's just... Well, at least people down in Washington have this,
smugness.
Like, have the backbone of like of Jell-O, so they're gonna do what the case they're gonna win, and that's gonna be a tougher case than the Google case, and the Google case eventually is something they're considering various things is gonna be tough too, so they're gonna have to pick the one they're gonna not look like idiots.
Thing, at least from the point of view of users, is there is a clearer and clearer choice between open and proprietary, although there is certainly some proprietary stuff in Android, and Google has not always been pure goodness.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure it's always that clear cut. I mean, although we do think of Google as being, you know, sort of very open, I think they're less open and more looking to scale efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
I think what always strikes me, my personal anecdote of the difference between of Apple and Google, is that when Apple's looking to scale something like the App Store, it scales it by just having hundreds of people sitting in a room approving apps really, really, really quickly, and that getting it right and making sure that every single app meets sort of all their approval processes down to, you know, the text that goes along with it is the most important thing for them in scaling that quality of experience. If you look at someone like Google, we've had a personal experience with YouTube where you can get licenses to sell your own ads against YouTube videos.
You're talking about Channel YouTube, Flip, your business.
Yeah. And YouTube has rolled it out to maybe like two people in the UK. And the reason they haven't rolled it out to more is because they can't scale it without machines. They haven't built the technology yet. And so rather than scale up and just throw people at the problem, they would rather do it in an efficient manner. And that's no less open or closed than anything that Apple has in the ecosystem. It's just they want to scale it using technology, not using people. And I think that's what Google is doing with, you know, looking at Android as well.
You also have to think about all these companies. You'd like to have these, you don't have to, we turn everything into a ridiculous horse race that they're once against the other. You know, Google's all over Apple Maps. It did not come off the iPad in this iteration, at least the launch.
Although Steve didn't really mention Google when he said,
No, he did. It was at the launch. They showed it. They showed the maps.
I saw the word Google.
Street View.
I saw the word Google. He said Google. Our maps. He was very clear saying maps.
I guess. But this is, of course, what technology people like parse over ridiculously.
Hey, that's my job. What
still,
are you talking
about? I know. It's still in there. The maps are still in there. Yeah. And they're
I agree. He didn't pull it. Although, what about this rumor that they want to replace Google with Bing? I mean, that's...
They could. That, of course, rumor. Thank you. You need to actually report a story out and find out if it's actually true before you write it. But that's just
so yeah, nobody's confirmed that. This is another one of those tech magic tech crunch stories.
But I mean, I think that putting them one against the other is just typical of us as reporters to do that. The fact of the matter is, you know, I used to send a friend into like a Best Buy and you know, people come up to you and I turned to the person and I said, this person is not your friend. You know how friendly they are? And I said, this is not your friend. They don't want to help you. They want to sell whatever stupid device they want to sell today. And so none of these companies are your friend. They want to do what's, you know, these are not your friends. They want to do whatever it takes.
In fact, they have a fiduciary. They're all publicly held, publicly traded. They have a fiduciary responsibility to their stakeholders to maximize profits, period. The difference, period. And you don't have to say anymore, except that the difference is in the business model. And Google even pointed this out in a recent blog post. They said, however, our business model, we succeed when you use the web more. And so openness is almost built into Google's business model because all they really care, they don't so much care that you use Chrome versus Safari versus Firefox, at least I hope
today,
not.
Today. They don't care.
They care
today.
That you use the web more, and Chrome, the point of Chrome is to give you a better experience, but all they care about is that you surf the web because they're going to win no matter what, whereas Apple wins when you use Apple products and only Apple products.
But the fact of the matter is Google has 70-some. Listen, I mean, let me just make disclosure. I live with a Google executive, and I'm frightened of the company. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, when you have 70-some percent of the market share in search, and you have, what, 90-some in Europe? I don't know. What is it? It's some ridiculous amount in Europe. And most countries, they have these massive things. They can do whatever they want. And so whether or not they do or not, or whether it's in their interest to be that way, they're still this massively powerful company. And it's not who runs it today. It's who runs it in 10 years. I mean, if they decide all of a sudden in their algorithm that everything that has pink in it is what we're going to, you know, it's a situation where I think they don't accept the fact that they have such power over the internet, and they think they're benign. And whether they're benign or not depends on who's running the company at the time and what's going on or anything else. So I think more competition
Exactly right. I think Apple in a decade's time when Steve is perhaps not the person at the top running it, it's going to be a very, very different company. From where it is now, and Google too.
Maybe I should point out at this point the New York Times editorial that came out on Thursday from former Microsoft executive Dick Brass, who was the guy who ran the tablet division at Microsoft, really hanging out some dirty laundry at Microsoft, saying, "Well, you know, we created ClearType, but we were told by a Microsoft executive that they'd only roll it out if he could have the employees and the technology in his division." The office guy said, ClearType makes me sick. It'll never appear in office over my dead body, and on and on. But the point that Dick Brass made was, and I think probably a good point, that Microsoft is essentially a dysfunctional company. And I wonder if that's just, I mean, look, it's almost like a business cycle. Look what happened to IBM. Dominant, over time, becomes less dominant. Doesn't go away. Microsoft's never going away. They made $6 billion last quarter. But they're not, in this whole conversation, they're not a player. They're kind of become irrelevant. And I wonder if in 10 years we'll be saying the same thing about Apple or the same thing about Google. I mean,
well, I think what's really interesting is that nobody has the ability right now to kill anybody else off. If you look at, you know, Google's market cap is what it was, just a quick Google is, ironically, I Googled it, is about 168 billion.
Wow.
Apple's at 177 billion. Neither of them has got enough cash to make a dent in the shares of the other.
Right.
So they're kind of locked.
But
in this
you would have said the same thing about Microsoft 10 years ago and the same thing about IBM 30 years ago. This is not it's hard for us to imagine their hegemony being shattered, but these things happen.
maybe. I mean, Microsoft's market cap is still above, you know, almost double. It's kind of above 300 billion.
Yeah, something like that.
It's which high. Which is crazy. So you know, if Microsoft chose to realize a lot of its assets,
but that's
it
the
could
point.
Buy either of them.
That's
I mean,
the
wouldn't
point.
It be amazing.
That's the point, though. They're just like, oh, I don't know. I mean, they don't.
Well,
not.
Although you have to give them credit. Bing is a nice effort. It is. No matter how you slice it. I mean, it's something Yahoo should have been doing for years now. But they are trying to make some efforts that are actually innovative.
Talk about damning with faint praise, Kara. nice effort.
Bing is good. I like Bing. I use it. It's really. I'm saying. It's something that they can't get much traction, although they've added market share a couple percentage points because they're so small. It's really difficult. And I think that if Yahoo had done this and tried to differentiate themselves from Google, that it would probably be a different story.
Right.
But I think they're trying on some levels, and I think they're just really good at operating systems is what they were good at. And Google's really good at search. And so that's what the problem is. You become really good at one thing. It doesn't mean you're going to be good at anything else or particularly successful.
The operating system is being replaced by the cloud. It's become less
important.
Well,
that is a problem, except for, you know, that's a little problem. Sure.
We are all Care Bears now.
is that a tweet? Are you getting ready for the game? We are all Care Bears now.
No, we said we live in the cloud. That's what the Care Bears did.
Oh, I'm sorry. Apparently, I missed that cultural reference. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's cool. We're here to help you.
You didn't enjoy Care Bears?
I'm younger than you fellas, and apparently I missed the Care Bear Revolution.
Yeah.
I was Captain Kangaroo.
Oh, dear.
If you make that's a bunny rabbit reference, I'm ready.
Okay. Mr. Green
That's
Jeans.
A great show title, you by the way.
You could be Mr. Green Jeans if you took off the glasses and wore some jeans.
I just need big pockets. Great. Thank you, Kara. Well.
No problem.
On that note, let me take a break. We're going to come back in just a second. A great panel, Kara Swisher, Baratunde Thurston, and of course, Will Harris talking about the latest in tech news. We're going to talk about the Facebook redesign that's upsetting people so much. You know, every pixel counts when you're a big-time website, apparently. Speaking of websites, I want to mention our friends at Squarespace.com. What a great New York-based company. Young guys who in college said there's got to be a better way to do a website. And Anthony and Dane and the gang said, we can do better, and they started writing some really amazing software. And now they've become more than just a content management system. They're a web hosting company that just does a fantastic job. We've moved our Twit blog over to Squarespace.com. I know many people, many of my friends have also gone to Squarespace for several reasons.
I use it.
You use it, Baratunde?
Yeah, I love it.
Tell me why.
Well, it allowed me to focus on just creating instead of worrying about coding.
Yeah.
And even I was on WordPress before, and I still have a lot of love for WordPress, so this is actually no slight against them. But I wanted my blog to change from 700 pixels wide to 900 pixels wide. And I just slid it. And
isn't that
happened.
Beautiful?
It's just easy. It's kind of like that big red Staples easy button, but for real. It was like just a lot easier to focus on the creation of the content and not so much the coding and design of the infrastructure.
With Squarespace, you start, they have 10, 15 templates, beautiful templates. But the point is that you're not stuck with that because you immediately, with drag and drop, can modify. There are 14 templates, 60 styles. You can so easily modify your site. And if you're a CSS whiz or a JavaScript whiz, there's no limit to what you can do. You're never boxed in with Squarespace. Beautiful sites. All you have to do if you want to see what Squarespace is capable of is go to the samples on the Squarespace site. Go to squarespace.com/twit, and you can do all of this. In fact, you could try it free for 2 weeks. No credit card necessary. It has import tools for Blogger, WordPress, TypePad. And export. I love this. You're never locked in. You can move around. Some of the most amazing sites are done on Squarespace because it's quick, it's easy, it's beautiful. You focus on the content. And because Squarespace uses a very sophisticated server technology, you never, ever get slash-dotted or dug out of existence. It's very powerful. Look how good this looks. Squarespace.com/twit. You can try it yourself. For free for 2 weeks, and if you use the Twit coupon code, you get 10% off. Starts at $8 a month. It's a great deal for hosting and the most powerful CMS system out there. Squarespace.com/twit. We love them, and I think you're gonna want to give them a try.
They have a pretty good iPhone app as well.
Oh, well, that, okay, just between us, that's the one that Apple blocked because they didn't like an icon.
Are you kidding me? You say just between us? Just between, like, me, you, and the internet?
Is that
you
just between us, kids. It's a beautiful app. They had to change one icon, like, 3 pixels, and then Apple said, oh, yeah, now it's perfect.
That's like, awesome.
What?
Our future is going to be determined by people who get upset about the pixel size of an icon.
But ridiculous. Steve has an incredible design sense, and you cannot, I mean, you, Kara, I know you held that.
I think it's great. I think if he wants to do that, it's just, you know, don't use it. I don't know what to say. Like, he does, this is what matters.
You have a choice.
I mean, when we were at the demo room at the iPod launch, I got some of it on video.
I know, you flipped it, which is so cool.
I got there's a whole 2 minutes of him talking about naming the iPod that I totally
iPad.
iPad, oh, excuse me. That was talking about the naming of it, which I, of course, pushed the wrong button and it didn't record. He was talking about fonts. He said, I think Katie Barrett asked him why he wanted iPad. He goes, well, the fonts look great. iPad, iPod, iPhone, they look terrific together. And that was one of his things that many things he mentioned. It was right in there. So it matters to him. He was a design, he was a font, he did that in college, right? Something like that. He studied font design.
That, and he worked in an apple orchard. That's the only thing I know about him. And he was barefoot much of the time.
That's never going away, I got to tell you. No matter what, I don't care how, it's never going to be ugly.
No, and I admire him immensely for that. And I guess you're right. You have a choice. You cannot use Apple. The problem is, as much as we geeks may moan and groan about the closed system, Baratunde, do you use an iPhone?
I absolutely do. Told you, oppression's delicious sometimes. Yeah. And it was the best tool. I mean, I had the G1, I had the MyTouch. And both of those were severely underpowered devices that just couldn't handle what I needed them to do. I mean, this device needs to be a mobile media production studio. And they didn't have enough RAM or enough processor power to do all the live coverage and photo taking and tagging and everything I wanted. So I got in bed with AT&T very reluctantly and very sadly. And I deepened my relationship with Apple, a company that I both love and hate in equal parts, depending on the moment of the hour of the day that I'm talking about.
Can I say
that sounds like a lot of my past relationships.
It is.
It's pretty. It's complicated.
It's complicated.
It's complicated.
The very best one.
It's a love-hate thing. Why are you torturing me? So I have switched. I switched about 3 weeks ago to the Nexus One and have not looked back. I'm really happy with it. There are a handful of apps I miss, but I can't. When I get the iPad, I'll have those apps.
It's a terrific phone.
I love the Nexus One. It's fast. It's.
What do you do about synchronizing media with iTunes, especially like Audible content, podcast syncing?
The one exception is Audible.
Albums, music.
There's a program from DVD John, the guy who cracked the CSS code. This is legal. No, there's nothing piracy in this.
Oh, okay.
He wrote a program called Double Twist that looks just like iTunes. It synchronizes the phone. It moves media over, photos. It works perfectly. It even does playlists. The only thing it doesn't do is Audible, because there's Audible DRM is not supported on Android yet. But I have it on good authority. It will be very soon. That will be the last piece of the puzzle for me. I mean, multi-touch was big, and once they added multi-touch, I'm very happy with it.
And you don't buy TV shows or movies from iTunes that you want to see portably.
Do you watch those on your iPhone?
I do.
Yeah, I watch most television on my iPhone.
Oh, see. So you can strip the DRM out. There are a number of ways to do that on both Windows and Mac, using the analog hole so you play it back. iTunes, you actually do it in iTunes. They're plugins for iTunes.
It'll take a while. Okay.
Yeah, it takes. It's faster than real time.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, depending on your Mac. But that doesn't bother me. And see, to me, this is why the iPad is going to be a great. I'm not going to carry the iPad on the subway, but there's a lot of. To me, I can see carrying the iPad to do that. This phone is kind of small, so. But you know, I do have the iPhone with me. You know why? There's one. It's this Words for Friends, a Scrabble thing. I can't stop playing it.
A game forces you to carry an entirely extra device.
Sad, isn't it?
No, it's
well, it's no worse than carrying a DS or something, right?
Say again.
No worse than carrying a DS.
It's like a this is my game machine. I think the iPad will be a very good solution for that. Yeah,
the iPad is the ultimate commuter machine. As someone who commutes 4 hours a day, it's going to revolutionize my life, I think.
It's a lot, you know, I'm fascinated to watch a lot of the, I was talking to an actual teenager the other day about the iPad, and he was like, it sucks. And I said, really? Have you touched it? No, but it sucks. And it was really interesting. I was like, actually, I spent many hours with it. It doesn't suck. But they were convinced that it does because of the flash issues and things like that around it. But I think people will be pleasantly surprised when they use it. Because it's, you know, someone else told me, well, you know, it's just like the iPhone or the iPod. And I'm like, what's wrong with that? You know, my mother could now pick it up and use it.
That's so exactly that's, what I want.
It's not a negative.
By the way,
he's right about a computer device.
The iPod and the iPhone were both reviled by many.
Absolutely.
And you know what? I kind of think, Kara, because I was in the petting zoo and held it and had a different experience as most of us who did hold it did from those who didn't. And when you look, and I realized that when I looked at the Apple site, it's kind of like the Fat Nano. It looks like there's something wrong with it.
It looks. Up close, you know, it's funny that people, you know, the thing is everyone expected to be some magic device. It was just, you know.
There were no unicorn tears.
Yeah, better than Viagra. Better than, you know, all
No,
of a
nothing's
sudden,
better than Viagra, I'm sorry.
Well, I wouldn't know.
But that expectation was fed by Apple using the word magical like 50 times in the presentation. It didn't come out of nowhere.
No, in fact, I think in some ways you could say that Steve made a few strategical errors in the speech. He shouldn't have brought up netbooks at all because this is not a netbook. If you want flash and you want a
Louis
camera.
Saying hello. That's Louie.
Hey, Louie. Oh, is he cute? Oh, my
God. He is cute.
Oh, stop being so cute. Get out of here.
Here's a dog. Here's a dog. Hello. All right. And move along from children and dogs.
For those of you listening at home, we've just seen a small child who is very cute with a missing front tooth and a dog of undetermined breed.
Yeah, it's a terrier.
I have a papillon.
He loves the iPhone. He can't wait. He's saving up for
it. It's so easy. A terrier can use it.
Exactly.
It's the iPaw.
The iPaw. That's a good name.
A whole new category of pet appliances. I think a lot of the, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm not the only person who's said this, but I think some of the negative response to the iPad is from people who don't like the idea of an appliance computer. And that's why I think it was a mistake to raise the netbook, because you can still buy a netbook. Buy a netbook if you want multitasking, flash, camera. You know, buy a netbook. It's $250.
It's not a computer.
But this is not a computer.
It's not a computer, and a lot of people are annoyed that it's not a computer. It's, as you say, it's an appliance. It's a device.
Yeah.
It's not a real computer, and some people will want a real computer and be disappointed. Some people will not care and will be very happy.
I think a lot of people, and I think, by the way, contrary to past experience, the $499 price point is the one that's going to sell the most.
I think part of what's happened, too, Apple has yet to fill a hole that people want, which is, you know, the MacBook Air, for all its beauty, is still a somewhat impractical sized small notebook for true portability because it's so broad and wide. The depth is really thin, but that's about it. And you know, we've got a touchscreen device already, so it's like, oh, this is a big iPod Touch. So there's something missing from the Apple lineup in a lot of people's eyes. They don't have a super light notebook. Plus, it's just easy to mock things that you haven't touched or used, and people want to pile
on. How much work do you do on the iPad? How much? I'm just curious of your work.
On the iPhone?
Yeah, what do you... On the iPhone, excuse me, on the iPhone. What do you guys do?
I tweet.
Everything. You know, everything. I use mostly, you know, especially a lot of, like, live events. I go to a lot of events and I try to cover them in semi-journalistic ways and sometimes comedic ways. Photo posting, use the Facebook app
really
on a regular basis, Tweety on a regular basis.
So you're going to like this.
Email.
Yeah.
But I would say there was a great post on a site called Emergent by Design, which a woman, Vanessa, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Mimis, M-I-E-M-I-S, she has a post called iPad, Overhyped Flop or Case of Great Design Thinking. And she waited to weigh in, which I think also a lot of people didn't do. They saw the keynote or they saw a live blog covering the keynote and they're like, I hate it. And just like, you know, you were saying, Kara, have you touched it? Have you used it? No, but it sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know that. I don't need facts.
Yeah.
So she waited and read all of the top criticism and praise, and it was a really smart and thoughtful post kind of in defense of the iPad, the key hook being it's not just the device. You know, the iPod didn't explode in sales until iTunes was launched.
It's all
and
about
that. And there was a gateway
to
connect content to the device.
It's
and
the channel.
So the iBookstore will be an interesting test for this. The connection with the existing iTunes app store will be a big test, but we won't really know is the ultimate truth that no one can really ever admit to.
Yeah, and it's got to be out in the wild. I think people have to see people using it to see if they like it. I mean, there's one from Plastic Logic that's coming that's quite beautiful, too. I mean, would it be great as a lot of these things? That's what.
Well, there are. I mean, gosh, there were 12 of them at CES.
That's going to be great. They're going to be great. And if they start to come down in price to a much lower price point, it becomes really interesting. That's, you know, beyond the iPad and the elitism attached to it, when these things get to be really inexpensive, it becomes incredibly interesting, and as they develop, I think personally, in these and the pad
is mobility. Well, I mean, is mobility the key element here? Is that what's is Kara? Is that what pushes?
Yeah,
this?
I think so. Be able to move around a house with one instead of being tethered to all kinds of things. I think that's, you know, in a perfectly wireless world. I mean, it's, you got to sort of weirdly enough give Bill Gates some credit, because he's been talking about it. I found an old piece I did from a CES from a bajillion years ago where he, you know, kept pushing the tablet format. And unfortunately, what his problem was, he really did.
Oh, yeah. He loved it.
I feel so sorry for Bill.
No.
He had a stylus.
He had a stylus. It was never running Windows. And don't feel sorry for the world's richest man.
No, but he was really...
Never feel sorry
really
for a billionaire.
Yeah.
That's just a rule of life.
Yeah. He was really behind the notion of mobility and portability.
Do you remember, Kara, that CES was the one that they dropped a house like the Wizard of Oz in the parking lot of CES?
It was
a whole house. And they had in each room, they
Microsoft
had
home, yeah.
Microsoft,
yeah.
And they had a mom in the kitchen with her tablet. They had dad in the living room with his tablet. They had Junior in the bedroom with his tablet. And they were all sitting there, these Stepford people. And the journalists would track through and look.
There is a great video called Future Vision or Future Productivity Vision. I'll have to send you the thing. It's on YouTube. That Microsoft did. I use it a lot in speeches because it really does show a world where this is where a tablet is at work, a tablet and other devices, especially screens on walls everywhere, which I think is also a thing that is coming in a very big way. And you should watch it. It's called Microsoft Future Productivity Vision or something.
Is this
like
the
that
one from 2019?
What I think so. It's just, it goes, you know, it's kids like. Kids in India and kids in the, yeah, that one. And they're you know, they're trading back things. And then there's a really funny spoof that IGN did, you know, about the whole thing that was even
funny.
Oh, I've
seen this. Yeah, I remember seeing this. Yeah.
Yeah, there's one where they have the guy with the little, anyway, it's a great video, but you should all watch. I put it up as that one and then the spoof at the same time, which the spoof was even funnier.
Allthingsd.com if you want to see that.
That's it.
Microsoft's always been good at making concept videos. Not so hot at getting these products out into the market.
Maybe go into video production work.
Really they've always had that great. In fact, that was one of the things Dick Brass said, is that he knew that the company was in trouble when they got the CEO of the company to wiggle his tush with Jerry Seinfeld in a commercial, and it was like, this is not good.
Those are bad.
This is not good.
No. Hey, team, I actually, I've got to go comment on things I don't understand right now.
It's time, to play football. Okay.
And that is the web, commenting on things you don't know.
Oh, that's all. That's what we all do. Really, Baratunde Thurston is at baratunde.com. Catch his comedy act in, is it in Brooklyn?
I perform all over. I host a weekly show in Times Square. People can check that out at sagecomedy.com or just, you know, find my website. The latest gigs are up there under live appearances. And thank you again. It's always a pleasure. Really an honor to be on here with you, Kara and Will. I've listened to you and read you both for a long time. So thanks for letting me play.
Really great to have
you.
Enjoy watching
the hand egg.
Grown man. Yeah, hand egg. Is that what you call it? Hand egg?
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember, Kardashian.
Put a poisonous name into my head so many times.
They're going to cut away to her 100 times. You know that. Her and her butt. They're going to do it.
Well, she's sitting down.
Very good.
She'll get up.
Knowing her, she will in fact get up, turn around, and wait. Yeah.
Oh, she'll get up and cheer.
Oh yeah. All right. Thank you, Baratunde. It's great to see you. What are you doing there, Will? What is that?
I was saying that's definitely the best thing about the Super Bowl is the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
I just saw a study of NFL football that said that the total action on the field part of the 3-hour television broadcast is 11 minutes, and the total amount of cheerleader time, Will, you'll be very disappointed to know, is about 20 seconds.
Really?
They don't sit on it very long.
It's like a wasted opportunity.
I know.
I mean, they actually had last year they had a big NFL event in London at one of the big London stadiums to try and turn English people onto NFL. And one of the big selling points was the cheerleaders, and every one of my friends that I know went to go and see this sort of thing of American cheerleading. Which
you don't have cheerleading in Britain?
Not really. I guess maybe it's sort of considered a bit gauche or something.
Not at all. I can't imagine.
Also, maybe No,
I'd love to see British cheerleaders. Like, two, four, six.
Oh, how exciting.
It would be all men, actually. It would be all men.
Oh, of course.
I guess the British equivalent are kind of, you know, sort of polo girls.
What?
Who sort of turn, you know, if you turn up to polo matches, there are always, you know, legions of Sloaney ponies watching the Sloane Rangers.
So you're saying that that whatever passes as the equivalent of high school in Great Britain, the team is playing on the field. There's no accompanying.
No cheerleaders. They don't exist. And having played in quite a lot of high school sports teams, I was very disappointed to find no cheerleaders.
So I wonder if this is only in America. I know Canada must have cheerleaders because they're just.
There's actually a British Cheerleading Association, I have to tell you.
Look at Kara's the reporter. She immediately Googled Britain and cheerleaders. Look at them.
It's cheerleading.org.uk. Yes, indeed. Dedicated to it.
Well, now that we've lost all our viewers, those who went to the Super Bowl and those who went to the cheerleading site.
I am on it. As a crack reporter, I am on this story.
You are so good. I was impressed that you whipped out your flip phone when Walt is talking to Steve.
Are you kidding?
No,
I was like, you know, Katie Cotton tried to give me an elbow, but I managed to whip back.
Well, that's what I was wondering because Steve doesn't normally talk to people. He tries not to talk to people on the record.
Yeah.
He's got a known antipathy to journalists, but then probably he didn't even notice.
You know, there was a crowd around him. And everybody was taking pictures and I think he was trying to ignore it. And probably if he hip checked Walt's partner would be a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They like Walt.
There was a lot of people behind him.
Yeah. Apple likes Walt. They don't want to mess with him.
Right. But I don't think he noticed. I should tell you, I don't think he noticed.
He noticed me.
I am small and tricky.
I am not small. And I was in the keynote holding up a laptop.
Oh, really?
and I think he did notice me because he gave me the stink eye a couple of times.
He may have given. I don't care.
I won't be going back. I'm sure they won't invite me back. Who has seen the Facebook redesign? Because maybe I've seen it and I just don't know.
What does
it look like? What is new?
I don't notice, honestly. The stories about Facebook's redesign, I mean, I know it matters a great deal, but it's just, you know, every time they redesign, everybody hates it and then gets used to it, sort of kind of thing. And it's just, it's not that big a deal. I don't think it is.
Yeah, I would say, why does it matter a great deal? Why even say that? I mean, it matters, I guess, to people who use Facebook constantly and they can't find a button.
Yeah.
So this is my Facebook. Is this the new designer? It looks the same as the old one.
And they made some tweaks in a variety of areas. I think what's more interesting is the stories about them doing email, which they should have been doing a long time ago. And that's important because their email is just the most atrocious product on the planet.
So they're going to have, is it going to be like Yahoo or Gmail where they have a Facebook mail?
I don't know. I mean, it would be nice to be able to forward their mail. You know, I keep saying, you know, it's 2010. You might want to have forwarded mail, but we'll see.
We have the crappy Facebook inbox is how they do it right now.
Yeah. I don't use it at all for mail ever.
No, because stuff disappears and there's no way to manage it. It goes missing. Right. I guess if they had like real email, but it doesn't make any sense if it's. I guess you could beef up the inbox or you could have
email come into it. I guess, you know, like regular email works, I suppose. I mean, that would be an improvement.
Is Facebook as dominant as they were? I mean, last year it looked like it was a Facebook world.
Yeah. Well, 400 million. I don't know. What's it like?
400 million users.
Everybody, you know, uses Facebook. I mean, there was a ridiculous statistic that, you know, was it last year sort of a third of all page views were generated on Facebook, like on the internet?
Wow.
And for a lot of people, I mean, it used to be that sort of Google was the internet. It was where you started for everything. And now it kind of seems like increasingly Facebook is the internet.
Yeah.
Which is terrible, but kind of true. When I talk, you know, I would say probably 90% of my friends use the internet 90% of the time for Facebook.
So there's a guy named Larry, I don't know, is it Ponymon? You have the Ponymon Institute.
Pokemon?
It sounds like that, but it's not. He's actually quite serious. Mm-hmm. And he did a study of what he calls the privacy-centric population. About 8% of the population don't sign up for supermarket loyalty cards. You know, mm-hmm. Stay away from all that stuff. He did a study of them. Most of these will still post pictures on Facebook, will tell stories on Facebook. They do not go to their privacy settings. They don't spend more time than others tweaking their privacy settings. And there's an interesting article on MSNBC's Red Tape Chronicles about this. Bob Sullivan's talking about the fact that Facebook seems to encourage people who are normally private people to go public.
Well, it's your friends, well, right? I mean, that makes sense.
Well, yeah. That's the illusion. Is it really your friends, though? I mean, this is part of the problem with Facebook is you get the feeling that only your friends are seeing it, but in fact, marketers can see it. Quizzes can see it. Your stuff is really wide open to everybody except people.
But that is part of it, right? I mean, part of the original appeal of Facebook was that you could share all of this stuff and you were only sharing it with your friends. And so it wasn't like sharing with the internet. It's like, you know, it's the same as having a mobile phone text conversation or something. I think what Facebook has been, you know, arguably disingenuous in doing is opening all that stuff up to the wider world, because now you kind of get a more web-like experience in terms of sharing your private stuff, but you think that you're sharing it in a much closer confines.
Sullivan talks about,
I think that
one of the issues being in some studies, they've shown that people will put information such as how many sexual partners they've had on Facebook, but not give it to not give it to a researcher to put on Facebook because they don't want a human to see it. So there's this kind of illusion that it's not really a person. I'm just putting it on a website.
Yeah, I don't consider Facebook for a lot of privacy. I mean, that's interesting, but I mean, most people really don't care what they put on Facebook. It seems like, especially younger people don't care. They put everything on there, and it's where they live. It's their little address book of the internet. It's their little home on the internet. You know, I think someone like me who's been around for 109 years, I get Facebook fatigue. I don't have time. But certainly, if you've grown up in that paradigm, it's the way you interact with the internet. It reminds me a great deal of how people used to interact with AOL a million years ago. Because that was sort of your home on the internet for a long, long time.
You wrote a great book on AOL, didn't you?
Two of them, in fact, because I'm a glutton for punishment. but I did The Rise and the Fall, pretty much.
Right.
And, you know, AOL had all these things. A lot of the social profiles, they were very crude, but they had the buddy list. Right. They had the chat. They had a wall kind of thing. So they really did pioneer a lot of this stuff. It's just a question of if once people get used to it, they move off. They certainly did off AOL within seconds when something better came available. But Facebook's been really effective at creating this home on the internet that I think is really interesting. I mean, I think it's another interesting thing that has happened, that people do want to feel a place that they're safe and or at least they feel
even
they're safe.
Even if it's an illusion. It's just an illusion, but they've had
that illusion. Of course. Yeah. That could be scraped so easily. I mean, that's the
thing. Right. So. Pew study came out. It's called Social Media and Mobile Internet Use Among Teens and Young Adults. They did two telephone surveys in September focusing on teens age 12 to 17 and then 18 and older. Blogging among teens and young adults has plummeted to half what it was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They're using Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, that's probably right.
That's where everything is going these days. I think there is this kind of lowered expectation of privacy. I think people just say, well, it's out there. I don't care really if it's out there, especially young adults. One of the reasons I'm paying attention to this is, besides the fact that I have teenagers, I'm going to do a seminar in a couple of weeks for families about what kids are doing online and what the consequences and risks might be. And we still don't know, do we, really?
Well, they do a little bit. I mean, it's like any kind of humanity. It's just a younger version of them. But, I mean, one of the things that I just did in eighth grade class at my kids' school, they're older kids. And, you know, there was a lot of name-calling stuff goes on right. these things between the schools and stuff like that. You know, very typical of what you'd expect them to do when they had other means of doing it. It just gives them super tools to be doing the things that they should and shouldn't be doing. But a lot of it was just, where are you at? What are you doing?
Right.
Here's my picture. You know, a lot of it's really mundane. And then it moves into dementia, like demented behavior in a very small group of people. So I don't know if it's so different. It's just the tools are really good to be able to share.
I want to talk about a grown-up who used Twitter to resign his job this week in just a moment. But before I do, I want to mention our friends at Citrix who do a great product called GoToMeeting. You know, they do the wonderful remote access stuff. Go to my PC, of course, the high-end enterprise stuff. GoToMeeting uses that same backbone of technology to make it possible for you to meet, accomplish stuff without the mind-numbing and bank book breaking travel that normally is involved in business. You know, business travel could just be so expensive, not to mention the stress and strain. I use GoToMeeting all the time. We actually use it on some of our shows. is a wonderful way to share sales presentations, product demos for training. You know, you can have the program on your system. The other guy doesn't. You show her how to use it on your system and say, okay, now I'm going to give you control. Go ahead and play with it, even though she hasn't installed it. The nice thing also is it's very simple for somebody to use. If you don't want a client to be jumping through hoops, if you want to show them a PowerPoint sales presentation, you're not going to make them say, go through three, you know, install software and do all this. This is very easy. You send them an invitation and email. They click a link. Or you can even do it while you're on the phone. You say, go to gotomeeting.com. You're there. Okay, press the join a meeting button. Now they're seeing your screen. They see your presentation just like you're there in real time. You can give them control. Mac, PC, doesn't matter. And at $49 a month for as many meetings you want, as long as you want, this is really going to save your company money. I want you to try it right now. Absolutely free for 30 days. You go to gotomeeting.com/twit. Give it a try. Show your boss. Do it with the clients. You can unlimited meetings. By the way, also includes voice over internet and free teleconferencing with this. gotomeeting.com/twit. I hear a dog.
Yeah, that says two of them, actually. So.
gotomeeting.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. Yeah. Yes, Will, go ahead.
I was going to say, I have to say, I actually was on a GoToMeeting last week.
I think more and more people are using
it. Experience. Yeah. We've had pretty miserable weather here in London, and the idea of trekking across London to go to a meeting was pretty grim. And so I had a GoToMeeting, and I got everything done, and it was pretty pimp.
Kara, are you in New York?
I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, you're lucky. See, those people back east... All are
I
just
don't care.
Snowed in. We don't care.
Yes, they are. Walt sent me some great pictures of it's like 4 feet of snow.
It's amazing.
Like, yeah, it looked like crazy. Like his driveway looked nuts. He sent pictures of his driveway and the walkway and the street, and it was pretty. I used to live in D.C., so it was a big snowstorm for them.
Is Walt in D.C.?
Yeah, he lives in D.C.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He used to cover the Defense Department.
Oh, really?
You know that. Cool. Yeah, he did. That he just became sort of this geekish person, and he was covering the Defense Department and wanted to do this instead, and everyone thought he was nuts because that was like a big beat covering defense. So, and a good choice for Walt, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. I always say that too. Technology been very, very good to me.
Yeah, he covered national security more than defense. He covered State Department.
Actually, that's a fascinating beat.
Yeah, he did. He covered Jim Baker, I think, during that tenure.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, it's been kind of sad to watch the transfer of power and the demise of Sun, which was one of the great... Mm. You know, the great companies.
It was.
Created by hippies, had kind of this hippie mentality, and yet did servers that ran the internet. They still run much of the internet.
Yeah.
But just struggled in recent years. And finally went out of business, acquired by Oracle. The acquisition's now going. Scott McNeely wrote what I thought was a surprisingly personal and, you know, a little indulgent, but that's what you'd expect from something highly personal.
And Scott McNeely. But go ahead.
Yeah, it was totally Scott McNeely, wasn't it?
Because he's been so shy over the years.
Yeah. You know? It was very funny to read it. It leaked out, I guess, the farewell.
It leaked out, yeah.
Yeah. Scott leaked it out over his Facebook, probably.
No, he sent it to like 400 reporters.
Oh, did he?
I'm assuming.
I got it from an employee, actually, of Sun. Yeah. But it was, let me see if I can find it because I could read some passages. But then the funniest thing is the CEO, Jonathan Schwartz, resigns via haiku on Twitter.
I know. My Little Pony was very amusing.
Why do you call him My Little Pony?
Oh, I don't. It's fake Steve Jobs does. It's really funny.
Oh, good. It's
because of the ponytail. He calls him
My Little Pony.
It's a perfect nickname.
It is kind of, you know?
Yeah.
Schwartz twittered, financial crisis, stalled too many customers, CEO no more.
Yeah.
Wow.
Was that like Haiku Thursday?
I'm deeply moved. Yeah.
I'm deeply moved.
Touched.
Yeah.
Touched. It is sad. You know, I have to say, Sun was started by very well-meaning people, brilliant technologists.
That last line could be CEO at fault, but I don't, you know.
Yeah, we won't say that.
Just saying, it works the same.
Well, that was interesting because Scott McNeely really threw himself on the sword a little bit more than Jonathan did.
Yeah, well,
he shouldn't have. Scott McNeely, farewell gang. When I interviewed many of you for employment at Sun over the years, one commitment often made was that things will change above, below, and around you faster than any place you've ever been. While it was never our primary vision to be acquired by Oracle, it's kind of an understatement, it was always an interesting option. So what do I say to you now that this is happening? And it goes on for many more paragraphs of nostalgia and strange references to the Eagles, the dress code. It's interesting. Did you guys publish it on your blog or?
John might have. Probably he did. Yeah. I think he probably did. It was a good note. I did read it. It was a good note.
What I liked about it, it would have been very easy for him to write something impersonal. And what he
That's
really
not
did.
Like him.
No. You know,
he's always been a character. He's always, when he posed in an outfit, like a superhero outfit.
Right.
And we had him on stage at D a couple of years ago, the very beginning, maybe 8 years, a long time ago, 7, 8 years ago. And he was, he was, as usual, hysterical and very forthcoming. And at the time, it was just starting to really decline. And he was pretty forthright about the situation then. So I found him always to be that way. Not that, I don't know if they could have done anything about it, but they certainly, he certainly didn't hide from what was happening.
What did happen?
I think they got jammed, really, pretty much from both sides. I mean, from all the different sides.
And, cheap PCs kind of moving up in power so that they could do what the servers from Sun did.
So, his was the network is the computer. That was his famous quote.
He was right. I never got it until now.
He was completely right. He had two famous quotes. The network is the computer, and there's no such thing as privacy. Get used to it. Something like that.
Yeah,
get
over it, he said.
Get over it.
Typical Scott McNeely fashion. And by the way, both were
right. Yeah, he definitely was right. I think they just got jammed. I mean, it's hard to be in that sort of muddy, in any kind of business, to be in that muddy middle is really tough. They probably should have gotten acquired on their terms many years before. There was some, possibility of Apple buying it at one point and IBM. There were all kinds of rumors. I think they definitely were in talks with all these people for many years, and they just didn't take the opportunity when they should have. Because of all, they sort of were proud of themselves and thought a lot of themselves. So that always happens.
Yeah, well, that's coming back to the discussion we had earlier about the fact that there's a kind of natural life cycle to technology companies.
And to some technology companies, certainly. I mean, Microsoft has been around for a long time, considering, since the early 80s.
But it is moving faster, I think that it's accelerating so much that you cannot. Absolutely. It's very hard because what happened to Microsoft happens very quickly. It's happening to Google, which is you succeed wildly beyond your wildest dreams. You grow immensely. You suddenly get huge market share. And then you find it very difficult to innovate because suddenly it's all about protecting what you've got. And a smarter, younger, brighter, hipper company comes along.
Well, I always subscribe to the Kenny Rogers school of the world, which is, you got to know when to fold out.
When to walk away. Know when to run.
Yeah,
I was a DJ for many years.
You know what? That is one hell of a song.
It is.
It's the best song ever.
It kind of says it all, doesn't it?
It does, man. I always, whenever I'm thinking, I'm like, no one does. Anyway, just saying.
Let's see. This is a PC World article. That's NPD Group study that says, I was surprised this. Most e-reader owners are satisfied. 93%.
Oh, they like that.
They love them.
Will, do you have an e-reader? I don't yet.
You don't.
I use them. I don't like the Amazon. I don't like black and white and no touch screen. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to.
Yeah, see, that's why you're going to love the iPad. What about you, Will?
Yeah, no. I was tempted by a Kindle.
You guys are a bunch of Luddites.
I've used it.
I tried it.
I read every night on my Kindle. I love my Kindle.
Apparently, the iPad, the iBook store is not going to launch in the UK alongside the iPad.
Oh, that's too bad. That's a nice, it's beautiful, scrolling.
It's elegant. Although I talked to Philip Ryu, who wrote the Classics app on the iPhone, which is exactly, by the way, what the iBook store book reader looks like.
Oh, interesting.
And he said, no, nobody ever, he said, in fact, I looked, when I saw the announcement, I said, maybe I missed an email. And he went back through his email saying, did Apple contact me? No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Nor did Will Shipley.
I don't know if you can patent.
You can't.
Page turning.
A wooden bookshelf's a wooden bookshelf. Come on.
Right. Exactly.
So. Apple knew that. But I think a little tip of the hat. Give them a few bucks. Because, it looks exact. However, now let me ask you this, Kara, because you and I have both held the iPad, but you spent a lot more time with it than me. And I guess the one question people have is it going to be easy on the eyes? People say, no, an LCD is not easy on the eyes. You cannot read it for hours. The Kindle, that's its chief advantage.
That is an advantage, definitely. The e-ink technology is easy on the
solid,
eyes. It's definitely easy on the eyes. I don't know. I haven't used it for 9 hours, so I'll get back to you when I've watched a movie. Yeah. But I've used my iPhone, certainly, for many, many hours watching.
Well, yeah.
I watched all of Heroes across the, going to Europe one time, the first season. So I didn't have a problem with it. I don't know. I haven't. Reading is more onerous on your eyes.
But I love the page turn. I love the aesthetics of it. The little.
We'll see. I haven't used it for enough time to know. Okay. I can't imagune reading 9 hours in a row. But I think more games. I think games will be interesting. But I think it's quite beautiful. The games are quite beautiful that I saw. We'll see. I don't know if anyone's going to use it for that long. I don't know.
My suspicion is that it'll be easier on the eye for longer than I can sit still and read.
Right, yeah.
Well, as Steve Jobs very famously said, and I'm sure he now
nobody
wishes he didn't.
Anymore.
Nobody reads anymore.
Yeah, he does. He said a lot of things. He said he wasn't going to do a phone at our conference, and we pressed him. And he said, you know, nobody, he didn't want to deal with cell phone companies. He said, I don't like going through orifices.
Oh, jeez. What a great line.
Oh, and also said nobody wants to watch video on a 2-inch screen.
Yeah, right. He said
and
a lot.
Very iPod.
You had Kara. You had a great interview with Bill and Steve together. That was that was just wonderful.
That was awesome.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we were lucky.
Yeah, I mean that was a moment, and you handled it quite well. I mean, you really.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a potential minefield.
Well, you know, we talked to them before because we wanted it to be bigger. You know, we wanted them not to be. I mean, although, you know, a cat fight would have been very entertaining for people. And I think there's definitely tensions between them. But I think that we wanted them to be on a higher level. We thought it was important for historical purposes and because they hadn't been together in almost any interviews ever.
Right.
To really talk about the big ticket item.
No, I loved it. And there was a great bit of nostalgia talking
yes,
about.
Yes, very just, touching.
I really enjoyed that.
My favorite line was when I said, is there a secret that people don't know about the two of you? And Steve Jobs said, well, Bill and I have been married for many years. And Bill Gates' face, he didn't know it was coming, like turned like,
But they both, you know what? Look, they're both smart guys. They're very successful. They have a good sense of humor sometimes. And
well, not all the time.
Not always. Once in a while. Yeah. I think if you got them in a nice, relaxed state, which really worked well.
We tried before because Steve Jobs has said some somewhat negative things about someone asked why. I think Walt had an interview with him before our big interview saying, why do people use iTunes on Windows? Why is it the most popular app? And Steve Jobs couldn't resist himself, and he said, well, if you gave someone ice water in hell, they'd be happy too. And Bill Gates was sitting in the front row, and I was like, oh no, like all of us, the PR person for Apple, we're like, oh, that's the end of that. Our interview is going to be ugly. And definitely Gates was not happy about that quote for sure.
Oh, Steve said also, Steve said the problem with Bill Gates, he has no taste.
Right. Well, yeah, he said that. So he does that all the time. He likes to tweak. He's sort of like that kid in school that likes to tweak the other kids, you know.
Jobs isn't immune. You've only got to look back at, you know, something like the iPod Hi-Fi.
Oh, you know, God.
And Jobs saying, I've replaced my entire Hi-Fi. I mean, that was such a crock, wasn't it?
I know.
I hope he didn't replace his Hi-Fi with that because...
Yeah,
it was a big
tricky
mistake.
Dude. He's a very tricky dude, and good and bad.
He's a good. He's a brilliant marketer. He's a brilliant businessman. He has great taste. There's no doubt about it. One last story: the Olympics are coming up. The 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, the Winter Olympics, and a number of athletes have said, "I'm not going to be able to tweet because it's against the rules." Here, an article in Wired magazine says American skier Lindsey Vonn. One of the potential stars of the 2010 Winter Olympics told her 35,000 Twitter followers she would not be tweeting.
No.
There is, in fact, no Olympic rule that sets up a blackout period. They are allowed to tweet. They're just not allowed to act as journalists, apparently. So they can't say, like, the results are in from the, you know, hockey game and it was 3-2.
Why?
That's a good question. Antiquated.
That's ridiculous. There should be tons of tweeting. I can't imagine.
Yeah, why
would
you? And let them tweet
whatever,
the results.
Or whatever, not just tweeting, but putting stuff
blogging,
on Facebook.
Posting.
They're going to do pictures. There's going to be like a ridiculous flood vomiting of information.
Well, that's what one of the Olympic guys said. This is going to be the Twitter Olympics. But they did publish a 4-page document, the IOC blogging guidelines for persons at the 21st Olympic Winter Games. And it defines a blog, personal information, no sound or moving images of the game.
Oh my God, yeah. Bite me.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Bite me. That's a good word.
Bite. Come on. It's so ridiculous. What if someone uses like a little flip camera? But it was so wild.
No, you can't.
People behind the scenes.
They've sold those rights to Pepsi-Cola. You can't.
Yeah, but some skiers behind the scenes before they go down the slope, and they go, hey, I'm about to go down the slope. Gives me look. Like,
well, it reminds me of our discussion about adcritic.com, which is that the people are still not getting it. It's amazing.
Well, NBC. What can we say?
Kara, it's been so great. I hope you will come back. I hope we haven't.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Bring your dogs. Bring your kids. You're always welcome.
I will. I'll have the dog. The dog is much more intelligent about
technology. No. Really
fun. Actually, no, my kids are. My kids are much more intelligent about technology than I am.
Well, it's good to have kids because besides the fact that you can now go to Disney movies again, you do get to find out how.
Oh, thank you so much for that.
How many times have you seen Up now?
Oh, you know what? You know, I went to see the Nutcracker this year.
Oh, that's fun.
For the 109th time. And so this woman in front of me got up and said to the person sitting next to her, and said, one more Nutcracker closer to death.
We have a Nutcracker in San Francisco called the Hard Nut, and that's the one you should go see.
I go to the gay one. I go to the gay one.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah,
that's a lot more fun.
Is that
the Ballet Trocadero? Who does that?
Yes, exactly. I don't know. One of the groups. I can't remember. We went to that one. The drag one. The drag one.
You know, you can't go wrong with a guy in size 12 pumps.
You know, they had it, interestingly, during my iPad launch. That's where they had it. And I was like, oh, this is where I went to the drag Nutcracker recently.
That's right. It was the Herba Buena Center for the Arts. That's right. Yeah. All Things D. Go to kara.allthingsd.com, and it's all aggregated there.
There's Jason coming by.
There he is. iPod prankster. Yep. Jason Calacanis talks about tweets. Thank you, Kara. We really appreciate you being
here. No
problem.
Thank you so much.
Will Harris, always a pleasure. I had to bring a Brit on because we knew you wouldn't care about that. What do you call it? Hand egg?
Yeah. It's not big on my list of priorities.
Hand egg. The big hand egg Super Bowl is tonight. But who cares about that?
Go to Colts.
Oh, at least he knows who's playing.
Are you for the Colts? Really? Not the New Orleans?
How could you be for the Colts?
I don't even know. I have no idea.
I just hear the Colts.
Will, all you have to do is go, who dat? And you'll be a pro.
Who dat?
Who dat? Which the NFL, just, by the way, says
you know
we
that
own.
That was just wrong. Do that again, because that was just wrong when you did that. Let's do it again,
Will.
Who dat?
That was just wrong. I like it. Let's make fun of the British people.
Thank you. I love you, too.
In this segment.
If you really want to see a good Nutcracker, go to England. Will is at channelflip.com, where you can watch TV on the internet. It's an amazing thing.
Twitter.com/Will Harris.
Oh, I forgot. I should say the Twitter handle. Twitter.com/Will Harris with one L, but two R's. Yeah. And Kara is on Twitter as well as at Kara Swisher. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you all for being here. Don't forget, Macworld Expo is coming up this week in San Francisco. I will be there giving the Macworld Live keynote, and we're bringing in some of my friends. It's going to be a lot of fun, including Adam Savage of the Mythbusters, Roger McGuinn, the founder of the Birds, and great folk artist who'll play. Heather Gold, the comic, will perform her classic, Max are Christians. And Windows is the pagans. I can't remember what it is, but it's a classic.
She's funny. She's funny.
She's cool. We love Heather.
And Leo, if we wanted to watch you live keynoting,
where would we do that? It'll be 2 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That is, I believe, 2100 UTC, British Standard.
Our John Patchkowski will be there.
No, 2 p.m.
cover.
10.
Who will?
John Patches.
Oh, we'll get Patchkowski up on the stage then. Kiki
you
Stockhammer
should.
Will perform
He's
as well.
He's got great, great eyebrows.
I will seek him out for his eyebrows.
No, go look at the picture on the website. That's why I hired him, essentially.
You know, when a guy's got great eyebrows, who the heck cares what else he's got?
I hired Peter for his, you know, grimace, and I hired John for his eyebrows.
Wow.
It's pretty much it. Yeah. That's how I do things here.
Peter's no shabby in the eyebrow department either.
He's got good eyebrows too.
Yeah.
It's a requirement for working on this website.
Apparently,
you got to look at so you have the look. Like we're really watching you, technology. Yeah,
we got our eyes on you. Allthingsd.com. And also Kiki Stockhammer, who was the demo goddess for the Amiga Video Toaster for so many years, and she's got a great rock band called Warp 11. They're a Star Trek rock band. We're going to be doing that. Yep, it's February 12th, 2 p.m. Pacific, Moscone Center, North Harbor, room 134. And then after that at 5:30, it's our TWIT meetup at The View, floor 39, the Marriott Marquis. That's 5:30 to 8:30.
Wow, that's a nice place too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, we only have the best venues.
I swear.
So that'll be fun. Come by and say hi. I'll be there, and all the TWIT folks will be there. I guess that's all the plugging I have. Watch the show live.twit.tv every Sunday. We normally do it at 3:15 Pacific, 6:15 Eastern time. We did it a little earlier today because there's some game on. You can also, of course, subscribe on iTunes, the Zune Store, everywhere. Just go to twit.tv. You'll find out all about it. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. Another TWIT is across the goal lines.
Doing the TWIT. Let's go around.